This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Exaggerator, down to the 16th pole. The Gutty Nyquist is coming out of it second. And then Stradivari, followed by Cherry Wine. But Exaggerator has turned the tables. He has won the Preakness Stakes.
It's Gone Runner. Gone Runner with Laurent Giroux. Clear to the finish in the Louisiana Derby. Gone Runner wins Going Away.
Also sponsored by Adena Springs, Airdrie Stud, Castleton Lions, Claiborne Farm, Coolmore, Daily Racing Form, Darley, DerbyBox.com, FarmPaint.com, Flair Equine Nasal Strips, Gainesway, Gulfstream Park, Jimmy John's, Kentucky Bank, Kentucky Downs, the Kentucky Horse Racing Commission, Kirkwood Stables, Lane's End, the Lexus Store of Lexington, Maryland Thoroughbred, Mill Ridge, the New York Thoroughbred Breeding and Development Fund, Nicholson Insurance, Owner View, Pin Oak Stud, Ramsey Farm, Santa Anita, Spendthrift Farm, Sunrise Stallions, Tony's of Lexington, the University of Louisville Equine Industry Program, and Washington Hay.
And Moore Spirit is progressing very nicely under Gary Stevens as he takes care of business with plenty left in the tank.
Creator of sudden breaking news, Creator's almost there. It's Ricardo Santana Jr. It's Creator to win the Arkansas Derby.
Now, here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Good morning once again, everyone. Welcome to Belmont Park in Elmont, New York, as we get set for the 148th running of the Belmont Stakes later this afternoon. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, Jude Feld, Pope Jude, Pontiff of the Pick Four. Happy Belmont Day, my friend.
Yeah, same to you. It's going to be fantastic docket of races this afternoon.
Oh, just absolutely tremendous. There is about a 50% chance of rain in the area as we move throughout the afternoon. Keep that in mind. Could go either way. We may have a wet track. We may have a fast track. That yet to be determined. Some people said that the weather's supposed to say north and west, and if that happens, we should be just fine later today. Post time for the Belmont coming up at 6:37 Eastern. We're going to have that coverage for you right here on HRRN in partnership with NBC Sports and Westwood One. All of the undercard coverage kicks off at 2 o'clock Eastern time. Then at 5 o'clock Eastern, we'll segue into that coverage of the Belmont Stakes. And you can see a complete listing of affiliates and SiriusXM channel information on our website, horseracingradio.net. And you can listen worldwide on our site as well. JT, no Triple Crown on the line this year. It was a year ago. We sat here and watched American Pharoah in that Tour de Force victory to pull off the 12th Triple Crown in racing history. Not the case this year. We don't have even an opportunity for that here at Belmont this afternoon.
Yeah, and you know, you can really see it in the crowd, and the atmosphere here doesn't have that buzz that we've had the last couple of years when we've got a Triple Crown on the line. And of course, last year everybody was at a fever pitch. You could just feel it in your bones that it was going to happen, and so the place was jam-packed. It's been very mellow here this week. Very few people out watching horses train, and we were at Saratoga when American Pharoah came out, and there was like 30,000 people in the morning to watch a horse gallop. You know, never seen that in my lifetime, and I've been at racetracks since I was 3 years old. So it's a whole different atmosphere here. Just everybody, the usual suspects are here: the owners, trainers, jockeys of horses that are stabled here at Belmont and that are participating in the races on Saturday. It's just one of those things where it doesn't have that edge, that statement.
I'll give you a perfect example of that. I made my way back to the barn area the other morning for a press conference that Keith DeSormo was holding, and there might have been, 10 media members around him. Many of those were people like Claire Novak from the Blood Horse and our friend Tom Law with the Saratoga Special. Very much an industry type of focus on Keith DeSormo. And let's face it, he's the storyline in this year's Belmont. He brings the horse Exaggerator that was second in the Derby and then won the Preakness. He brings him here. He's the morning line favorite. On paper, he's the one to beat. And if he runs his race, they're probably all running for second money. But there was nobody around him. It was completely different than what we saw last year with Bob Baffert, and I guess you would expect that type of well, situation.
Well, yeah, and Bob Baffert undoubtedly feels the same as we were teasing him at Preakness about wandering around with no entourage. Even at the Derby, he didn't have anybody with him in the mornings. So what a difference a year makes, and every event is different and has unique properties, but we forget the fact that we're not going for a Triple Crown. We've got a bunch of Grade 1 races. It's a Breeders' Cup quality card here. Yep. A lot of the best horses in training in the United States will be participating this afternoon. And so when you you look at the overall picture, it's a really, really nice day of racing. But, it's just the morning buzz has kind of given way.
10 stakes races coming up later today. 6 Grade 1s, all culminating with that 148th running of the Belmont Stakes. And keep this in mind, the Breeders' Cup won't be contested until November 4th and 5th at Santa Anita, but we have 2 Breeders' Cup win-and-you're-in challenge races on the docket for this afternoon. The Grade 1 Met Mile, which comes up as race number 9, that's a win-and-you're-in for the Dirt Mile, and then the Grade 1 Ogden Phipps, which, of course, will be run before the Met Mile. It's run actually before we come on the air at 2 o'clock Eastern time. That's a win and you're in for the Breeders' Cup Distaff Division.
Yeah, and these races are important not only for the win and you're in, but the Grade 1 status that they bring, and especially the Ogden Phipps. I mean, there's a nothing like having a Grade 1 winning filly to head to the breeding shed later on, and, of course, a lot of these fillies in the Ogden Phipps have already won Grade 1s, but it's an important race, very important on the card, and a race that is typically proving broodmare.
Yeah, Aaron Grider is going to join us after our first commercial break. Of course, the journeyman jockey is going to be riding Maiden and Longshot Trojan Nation in the Belmont later this afternoon. He also involved with his charity, which does some amazing work for children in Africa. We're going to talk to him about that, and we'll tell you about all the things he's doing off the track. He comes up right after our first break, and then you're going to hear from our entire broadcast team as Kurt Becker and Jeff Bloom will swing by for a segment right around 8:35 Eastern. And then Johnny V, the Hall of Famer, caught up with him yesterday, and he spent some time talking about riding here at Big Sandy. This is a racetrack, mile-and-a-half oval, the only mile-and-a-half racetrack in North America, and it's often said that jockeys can get lost on this track. Well, he talked about that, and we're going to hear from Johnny coming up later in the first hour as well.
Yeah, we've heard about jockeys getting lost, and we've seen them get lost. So
not just here at Belmont, by the way.
There's a Magritte painting called The Lost Jockey that I used to have hanging in my office at Chestnut Farm. I believe it's still there, and it's one of my favorite paintings, but it's a jockey running through the forest. Well, there's no trees here, but jockeys do get lost at Belmont Park, so it'll be interesting to hear that interview.
All of our undercard coverage this afternoon from 2 to 5 is presented by visitbarbados.org, and if you're a racing fan, which if you're listening to this program, you probably are, and if you enjoy vacationing in tropical locations, I can promise you there was no place to combine those two loves, no place better than Barbados, and you can go to visitbarbados.org to learn more. Petra Roach is going to be with us right around 9 o'clock Eastern time. She will tell us all about Barbados. She is with Barbados Tourism. She'll tell you why you want to go to Barbados. Why wouldn't you? That's my question.
Yeah. Having been there, I'm glad you've come over to my way of thinking.
Yeah. Simply spectacular. She'll be here at 9 o'clock Eastern time. And then you're going to hear from trainer Todd Pletcher at 9:25 Eastern. He took the time to talk about his two Belmont horses, Stradivari and Destin. And Dora Delgado from the Breeders' Cup right around 9:40 Eastern time this morning as well. So it's a very, very busy show. We're going to cover an awful lot of ground for you as we edge closer to Belmont 148. And Jude, here's something else. I have always likened this particular race, and let's face it, as we alluded to a short time ago, it's a different atmosphere here when you have a Triple Crown on the line. But even if you don't, it's kind of like golf's Grand Slam, where you have the four majors. And, you know, look, you don't often have a golfer with an opportunity to win three of the four. Forget about all four. That just doesn't happen. But it doesn't matter. Each of those tournaments is considered a major. well, this is a major event in thoroughbred racing. Whether there's a Triple Crown or no Triple Crown, it's still the Belmont Stakes, it's still a mile and a half, it's still a classic, and it's still a major in this sport.
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, it's a very important race, you know, on the calendar and history, for breeders everywhere. You know, horses that win this race, you know, become some of our stamina stallions later on in their career. So, you know, it is an important race and an important event. And, you know, it's a shame now. Everything's so instant, like, you know, Twitter and Facebook. And it takes a lot of time to develop a race like this. And it's a very historical event. And people lose sight. Once the Triple Crown's gone by the wayside, they go, oh, well, on to the next big thing.
Right.
You know, but this is a big thing. You're right. And, the Belmont Stakes is one of America's greatest races. Let's face the facts. I mean, who in our business wouldn't love to own a Belmont winner?
Yeah, right? I would.
I would. And most people would, too. It's the casual fans. You know, that's the thing. When you have a Triple Crown, people get excited. And people that aren't really serious racing fans, maybe like the fringy type of fan that likes horse racing, enjoys the sport, watching on TV and whatever, but you know, they're not dyed in the wool or maybe degenerate, as some people like to say, as a term of endearment. But you know, it's a big race, and it means a lot to a lot of people. So we're gonna have some fun today.
One winning owner and trainer hoping to hoist that August Belmont Memorial Cup, which is the trophy given to the winning connections of the Belmont Stakes, and one horse hoping to be draped in that blanket of white carnations, which is comprised of more than 700 select carnations from Colombia that are hand-sewn onto the blanket, and that all takes place later today. Post time, 6:37 Eastern. You're going to hear it exclusively right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Poll question, pretty easy today. Go to @HRN on Twitter and let us know who you think is going to win the Belmont Stakes. You can take Exaggerator or everybody else. How about that? Exaggerator or the field? I think I got to go with the field.
Exaggerator's going to be like 3-5.
Yeah, as our good friend Ellis Starr says, don't let friends bet chalk.
Friends don't let friends bet chalk.
Yep.
Yes.
All right. We're going to be back to visit with jockey Aaron Greider. He's hoping to be the one in the winner's circle later today. We'll talk to him next on the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
When it's time to paint the fences and barns, think Farm Paint. At Farm Paint, you get the industry's best coatings and paints factory direct at low, low prices. Farm Paint is your source for quality paints, roof coatings, dustless arena footings, and more. You can purchase online or drop into a Farm Paint store near you, with locations in Heart of Bluegrass Country at 700 Phillips Lane in Lexington, Kentucky, Columbus, Ohio, and Sandusky, Ohio. Buy factory direct and save at farmpaint.com. That's farmpaint.com.
Adina Spring Stallion Mucho Macho Man was a precocious two-year-old, finishing runner-up in both the Grade 2 Nashua and Grade 2 Remsen, despite being a June 15th foal. As a three-year-old, Mucho Macho Man displayed his classic ability with an impressive win in the Grade 2 Risen Star before a game third-place finish in the Kentucky Derby. As an older horse, Mucho Macho Man dominated his competition with Grade 1 wins in the Awesome Again, Suburban, Gulfstream Park Handicap, and Breeders' Cup Classic.
Mucho Macho Man and Gary Stevens as they take the Grade 1 Awesome Again in effortless fashion.
Mucho Macho Man wins the 126 Suburban.
And Mucho Macho Man has won the Gulfstream Park Handicap.
Mucho Macho Man, the more they asked, the more he gave.
An earner of $5.6 million. Mucho Macho Man's first foals arrived this spring. Learn more by visiting adinastallions.com.
Bloom Racing.
Majestic City could also still do it, and here he comes.
Majestic City running a big one.
Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Soul Driver the leader, though. Soul Driver in front.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
A multiple graded stakes winner and earner of more than $1 million. AlterNation reeled off four consecutive stakes victories.
AlterNation, just far too much class for this field.
AlterNation running a powerful race here.
Cannot match stride with AlterNation.
And it's a photo AlterNation.
Great breeding from a family of successful sires, grand appearance, and brilliance on the racetrack. AlterNation at Pin Oak Stud.
Here with Joe Brown Nicholson of Nicholson Insurance Agency. Joe, what would be a common misunderstanding between an insured and the insurance company?
Mike, one issue is a policy condition that requires notification when an insured animal becomes sick or injured.
Do you mean in life-threatening situations?
Not just then, but if a veterinarian is called in for treatment other than routine care. Take, for example, if a yearling colt gets his foreleg caught in a fence and tears the skin. The coat is stitched up and everything seems fine, but later the coat develops a systemic infection. Then there is a serious situation that the company knows nothing about.
So the company needs to know, even if it's not a life-threatening situation.
That's right. It's a policy condition. The company has a stake in the health of the animal because of the existing insurance policy. The company might want to have its own vet examine the horse. In most cases, though, just a call or email is all that is needed.
For all your equine and general insurance needs, including farm owners, liability, homeowners, auto, and more, contact Nicholson Insurance Agency at 859-224-7080. You gotta know Joe.
Hi, this is Doug O'Neill. My favorite radio show is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
And they're into the stretch, and it's Nyquist in front. His adversary, Exaggerator, got a jump on him, and he's gone by to take the lead as they come to the gate pole. It is Exaggerator in front. Now, Nyquist switches back to the outside. Exaggerator down to the 16th pole. The Gutty Nyquist is coming at him in second, and then Stradivari followed by Cherry Wine. But Exaggerator has turned the tables. He has won the Preakness Stakes. It was very close for a second. Nyquist and Cherry Wine were right together. And then it was Lounge on the outside. Lonnie followed by Stradivari. And the final time was 1 minute 58.31 seconds. It was Exaggerator's day today.
Mike Penna, Jude Feld, back with you on the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Larry Colmus with the call of the Preakness Stakes 3 weeks ago. Exaggerator getting the victory that afternoon. Of course, 2 weeks prior, he was second to Nyquist in the Kentucky Derby. We'll see if he can get to the line first in the Belmont later this afternoon. Post time 6:37 Eastern. Our coverage beginning 2 o'clock Eastern time this afternoon, and we'll take you all the way through that Belmont Stakes. You can go to our website, horseracingradio.net, for a listing of affiliates, SiriusXM, channel information, and to listen worldwide. JT, jockey Aaron Greider is going to be participating in this year's Belmont. He's hoping to knock off Exaggerator and everybody else with the maiden Trojan Nation. He's 0-7 coming into the race, could exit 1-8 if Aaron can work his magic later today.
Well, Aaron certainly has magic to work, and he knows a lot about getting horses around there. I've known him since he was an apprentice. He won one of his first races for me on a filly named Jake's Folly back in the day.
Wow.
Maiden allowance race at Santa Anita. And we've been friends ever since.
Do you remember that race, Aaron?
I do remember that race, yes. And Jude was always great about giving people a chance, you know, and it was always an honor to become his friend. But just to be around Santa Anita, you know, you're always looking for a chance and an opportunity. This game's about access to opportunities. And Jude always, you know, put his neck out on the line and gave the guys that weren't doing that well an opportunity and said, look, they're as good as anybody else if you give them the right horses. And thank you for that, Jude.
You're welcome.
Well, you're a native of California, right?
Yes,
West Covina?
Yes,
is that
sir.
Right? Yeah. So it had to be a huge thrill for you to get started and start winning races in your home state.
Oh, I had a blast. And, you know, back then it was just amazing. The jockeys that I was surrounded by with Chris McCarron and Eddie Delahousie, Gary Stevens and Bill Shoemaker, it just went on and on. Fernando Toro and, you know, it was just so fun to be around them and learn from them. And then the trainers that were there were, you know, you were in awe when you'd ride for Charlie Whittingham and, you know, Ron McAnally still training and just all the good horses that you had access to. And it was just you know, a great way to learn and a great way to accept the business and learn the ups and downs was from those kind of people.
I have to tell you, I was shocked to learn that you'll be riding in your first Belmont Stakes this afternoon. You've been in so many big races in your career. You've won so many big races. I thought for sure it's Aaron Greider. He's a regular in the Belmont, and I couldn't believe this is your first mountain race.
No, it is, and, you know, I lived here for 10 years and had some very good success while I was here.
Yeah.
But this is my first mountain in the Belmont. I'm very excited about it.
Yeah, it's such a great race and a lot of history. And your horse is unique coming into it. And when was the last time a maiden ran in the Belmont? It's probably been a long time ago.
It's been a long time, I'm sure.
But he's got some representative races on his chart. How do you assess his chances?
Well, you know, it's a mile and a half, which separates a lot of horses. And, you know, people keep talking about there's not much pace, but I think everybody's in the same boat. There is going to be some pace. You know, there's a couple horses that showed a little bit of speed in the Preakness and some of the other races. There's obviously some horses that will take advantage of no pace and try and put themselves a little bit closer. You know, my best chance is to let him run his race, get into stride, and wherever he's at, it's I have to rely on him getting a good trip and his stamina being, you know, the major factor down the lane. You know, you see a lot of horses that, you know, like Smarty Jones, he was the best horse that day, but he got attacked at the half-mile pole from Eddington, and after that he got it from Hard Rock 10 from the 5/8 pole. So he had to run hard, you know, mile out. So people are going to be looking at Exaggerator and different horses in there. Nobody's going to pay attention to me, just like in the Wood Memorial. You know, it's just about getting the right trip. And, you know, I mean, I applaud Aaron Soans for taking a chance at this. This is where he's wanted to be, and this is why he bred a horse like this, was to be in these classic races. And, you know, if he would have won the Wood Memorial by a nose, nobody would have thought he doesn't belong here. You know, but because he's a maiden, obviously people say, why would you run a maiden in the Belmont or in the Kentucky Derby? But, you know, so be it. He's here, and he represented himself well enough in New York when he ran the Wood that he should take a chance.
Aaron, so often we'll hear this racetrack talked about as being a track that jockeys can get lost on. It's a different configuration, the only mile-and-a-half track in North America. How much different is riding races here at Belmont as opposed to other tracks?
Well, it's so different because you'll see a lot of riders that will let the horses run, you know, going into the turn, and you can win a lot of races like that. I mean, Winning Colors won the Kentucky Derby because Gary Stevens snuck away at the 3.5-furlong pole, 3/8 pole, and opened up and beat 49er by a neck. And, you know, the races can be won in the turn, but they can, here at Belmont, they can also be lost. I mean, Real Quiet won the Derby and the Preakness that way. But going into the turn here, when you allow one to run, you've got 4.5 furlongs, so a little over a half mile, and you'll see them get tired and late. I mean, they go around that turn, they've already gone, you know, a full quarter of a mile. You turn for home, and it's a long stretch. So, you know, it wears on horses. And no matter how good the riders are, they ride the Belmont different, you know, especially going a mile and a half. You will see some horses making middle moves down the backside. A track where it would be a normal mile track, it might be moving into the 5/8 pole. Here it's going to be at the 7/8 pole. You see people shifting their position, doing different things. And, you know, I won the Brooklyn here a couple years back on a horse called Kaleidoscopio.
Yeah.
You know, I was at one point I was about 30 lengths back, and I didn't move on him. I said, my chances, move late, move whenever. If there's no pace, there's no pace. But that's his style of running, and, you know, I'll do the same thing, you know, today in the Belmont. It's going to be whatever my horse, wherever he's comfortable, if it's 8 lengths off it or if it's 15 lengths off of it. If he's good enough, then that's how he's going to win, not chasing into the speed.
Kaleidoscopio's race was one of the most amazing races I ever saw.
Yeah.
I mean, that horse looked like he was going to be hopelessly beaten all the way around the track, basically. And then he came flying at the end. And it was so so unique and so cool to watch. It's a race I'll never forget, even though it wasn't, you know, grade one or, one, you know, fancy horses in there. But what a great race that horse ran that day.
He was so fun to ride because he was a 10-year-old. And I rode him in the Breeders' Cup, and people were laughing at him when he was – training for the Breeders' Cup. He used to gallop, went bareback, and had a bonnet on his head, and, you know, just he looked funny. A lot of times he would refuse to train, and I started getting on him, and I remember Breeders' Cup week people asking, do you think you have a chance? And I don't usually say I'll win races. I'm not cocky about things, but I felt so confident about him all week long. I told everybody he's the only single on the card, and he won that day. But here it was an amazing race, but he was just a fun horse to ride, and, you know, it's always fun to come home with a victory, and especially in that type of fashion.
Talking with jockey Aaron Greider, he'll be aboard Longshot and Maiden Trojan Nation in this afternoon's Belmont Stakes. It would be his first win if he can pull it off. Not for Aaron. Well, it would. It would be his first Belmont win, and it would be Trojan Nation's first career win. Aaron, for people like Jude and I and the vast majority of our listeners that have never experienced what it's like to be charging down the stretch on a horse in full flight like you did with Kaleidoscopio, like you're hoping to do with Trojan Nation. What, describe that feeling. What's it like when you're storming home and you kind of know that, hey, I've got horse and I've got a shot to win this thing?
I've tried for 29 years to explain it, and I've never never been able to get close to it because you have to feel it, and I wish everybody could have that experience. It's the rush of it to become one with an animal and be able to have that animal respond to your cues and just know how much work went into it with all the grooms and the exercise riders and the trainers for, you know, a couple of years from the farms. And, you know, it's just everything has to come together that particular day. You know, you're not always on the best horse, but you can make certain moves that make a difference. And, you know, when you know you had something to do with that victory because of different things you did, you're always proud of the things you did and the way you rode. But it's just about being with that animal, and the power underneath you is exhilarating.
Yeah, it's got to be just amazing because jocks, even when they get hurt, they can't wait to get back.
Yeah, Johnny described it as a drug. When I talked to John Velasquez about it, he said that feeling you get, it's like a drug. You just keep wanting more and more.
It is. It's crazy. I mean, like you said, Jude, I mean, we get hurt, and the first thing usually in the hospital is, you know, how long?
Yeah.
You know, you ask the doctors, and, you know, it's like we always come back a little bit sooner, or we try to, because you can't get enough of it. And part of the excitement, I think, is the adrenaline rush of the danger. You know, I mean, we always want to escape it, but it's like you're with so many animals right around you and different riders thinking and the movements you have to make. It is like a drug. It's very addicting.
Aaron, off the racetrack, you're very involved with a charity by the name of thegivingcircle.org, doing some amazing work to help children. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, it was founded here when Hurricane Katrina hit Louisiana in 2005. And it was just a friend of mine and I that he lives up in Saratoga and I was living down here. And he said, we've got to do something for the kids of in Louisiana. You know, everybody else was sending food and doing things. So we started wondering what we could do and talking to schools and different organizations. And we said, we're going to have a Christmas. So our first thing we did was called the Cajun Christmas. And we ended up getting, you know, I started putting things in my two-car garage and I couldn't believe how quick that filled up. And then I had to go buy rent storage units, and we ended up getting two semis sent down. Everything, the semis, including the gas and everything else, was donated to us to drive down to Louisiana. And we gave Christmas to over 7,000 children. And, you know, being able to give back and do things with kids and families is something I've always enjoyed doing. You know, I love taking time with the fans. But this was different, to be able to help people that almost seemed helpless, you know, and they didn't know where to go for help. So, again, it became something that we wanted more of. We wanted to do more. And, you know, in 2010, it became the Giving Circle. And, you know, we've just done so many things. When Hurricane Sandy hit here on the East Coast, we did a lot of work in Staten Island and New Jersey. And, you know, we've been able to do a lot of things. It's not just about children, but it's helping everybody. We've built homes. We've done different things. And, you know, for the last 7 years, we've been doing stuff over in Africa. So it's been very exciting where it's gone and how it's grown. You know, just people surround people that want to help. And, you know, it's amazing how many volunteers we have now that are going over to Africa in just a couple of weeks. They'll spend 2 weeks over there doing a lot of building. You know, it's just great to see people that come together like that.
Have you been to Africa?
I have not yet. Racing's always been, you know, it's the time of year when racing's always been at its peak. But I do plan on going. You know, obviously I'm getting more time. Or actually, I'm getting less horses, so it leaves more time. So I will be going here in the next, you know, few trips. But I'm very excited to go, and I am very involved with it.
Yeah, you're building playgrounds, orphanages, schools.
Right. You know, we built the first freshwater well in Uganda, which is amazing. I mean, if you see the way that they live and the water that they have to drink, and, you know, they're sick, and they all the children, people have parasites, and we've been able to clean out that water and have fresh water wells for them. And, you know, it's just amazing to see kids that never went to school. And now we have over 500 students. But the amazing thing is at one of the schools we have to see how they are on a playground. You have to teach them how to get on a swing or a slide. They've never seen that. And, you know, we take it for granted. And they've never seen joy and play like we do in America on a daily basis. So now it's fun to see their happiness. And, you know, it's fun when the groups go over there and they document everything, and there's so many videos, and they'll, you know, I sponsor a couple children that help them through school, and you know, you can do it for $35 a month. And what's great is the children every you know, couple months make videos, and they'll send them to that family, and you know, so you get to see the child that you're actually helping and build a relationship with them. So it's a lot of fun.
Do you have kids of your own?
I do. My son's 16 and my daughter will be 14 next month, and they've been very involved in the sponsorship. I put it in their names so that they get to know these children. They'll be about the same age as themselves. And, you know, it's like it opens your eyes as far as, you know, when you think you've got it tough and you talk to children over there, it's been a good lesson for them as well. You know, they don't take it for granted anymore, and, you know, they've wanted to help. And so, you know, it makes me proud that my children have that in their hearts.
When I was coming to the hotel from the train station here a few days ago, my cab driver was from Liberia, and we were talking about Africa and different things, and he is very active in charities that he sends money home from the United States, but he was so thankful to live here and to have his kids born here. And when you encounter somebody like that and you realize, you know, how lucky we are, I heard a stat one time that the water in our toilets is cleaner than what 90% of the world drinks. And you know, when you hear that as an American, it like freaks you out.
Yeah.
You know, but people don't realize, unless you travel, unless you investigate, unless you put yourself on the line to do some of these things, people don't realize, you know, how the rest of the world lives and how difficult it can be for people.
Yeah, we're very fortunate.
Aaron Grider with us here on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Aaron, if people want to get involved in the charity and they do want to help, and we hope that so many of our listeners do, how do they do it?
Well, you just go to thegivingcircle.org, and right now we're trying to raise some money for a playground. They can go on givingcircle.org. You'll see that you can donate $5, $10, whatever you choose to donate. 100% of what we raise goes straight to everything we do in Uganda, and it'll go, you know, the first – until this playground is paid for, that 100% right now is going towards the playground. Again, I told you we have, you know, dozen, 15 people going over there for a couple weeks. They donate all their time. So you just feel confident that what you give definitely goes directly to the people that you're trying to support. So it's thegivingcircle.org is where you find it all, and we appreciate everybody's support.
There you go, and you can learn more by going to that website. Videos, blogs, they have all the about information that you need. Go ahead and check it out, and of course you can make your donation right there at thegivingcircle.org. Aaron, really appreciate the time, and all the best with the charity. All the best on the racetrack as well, not just with Trojan Nation, but all your horses, and safe trip every time you get a leg up.
Thank you so much, Jude. It's been a pleasure being with both of you guys, and have a great day.
Yeah, you too. Thanks for coming on.
Aaron Grider, like all of our guests who appears on the program, going to receive a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race. It's the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. Don't forget to embrace your passion at EmbraceTheRace.com. This is typically the time when we would bring you our Lexus Legends of the Turf story, but in deference to a very busy morning here on Belmont Day, we're going to bypass the story portion. We'll have a word from the Lexus store of Lexington and a couple other sponsors, and we're back with more right here on the Equine Forum.
Lexus. Once driven, there's no going back. Through inspired design, relentless innovation, and uninhibited performance, Lexus continues their pursuit to perfection with not only precisely engineered automobiles, but powerful, profound, and passionate experiences that move you like never before. Hey everyone, Mike Penna here, and extremely proud to say that I am a Lexus owner, or better yet, a member of the Lexus family at the Lexus store of Lexington. I've told you for more than a decade that the people make the difference at the Lexus store, and that is why I am so proud to be their customer and a member of their family. If you're in the horse business, there's no reason to look anywhere else. As the sponsor of the Grade 2 Lexus Raven Run at Keeneland every fall, the team at the Lexus store of Lexington is committed to supporting the horse industry and to being the dealership of the equine industry here in Central Kentucky. See for yourself. Stop in and talk horse racing with the godfather, Tony Attiano, and all the great folks at the Lexus store of Lexington. And I promise you will love your Lexus experience.
Pin Oak Studs, Broken Vow, ranks among the top sires in North America every year. Runners by this outstanding son of Unbridled have earned nearly $54 million and won major stakes on all surfaces from coast to coast. Sought after in the sales ring and hard to catch on the track, Broken Vow consistently has success at the highest level. Broken Vow at Pin Oak Stud.
What is it about Tony's steaks and seafood that makes it such an incredible dining experience? Well, it could be the steaks. One reviewer said, "This is steak nirvana." Or how about the great seafood, the incredible atmosphere, and service that's unmatched anywhere? All of those things. It's Tony's of Lexington on Main Street, right across from Triangle Park. Come in and become part of Tony's family.
I'm back with Dr. Jim Chiappetta from Flair Equine Nasal Strips. Jim, why are we seeing more horsemen around the world using Flair strips?
Mike, I think more horsemen are realizing the simple fact that breathing easier is critical for horses' health and performance. When running, horses are bringing in about 10 bathtubs of air every minute through the narrowest part of the airway that collapses at speed. What the strips do is support the tissue in that region so it collapses less, so horses bring the air in more efficiently.
Breathe easy with Flair strips. FlairStrips.com.
Power.
A Fleet Alex strolling home in the Preakness to win by three.
Passion.
A Fleet Alex opening up with a tremendous burst of energy. He's five lengths clear at the eighth pole.
Performance.
It is Texas Red just outclassing them. Look at this for an easy one in the Breeders' Cup.
Gainesway Stallion of Fleet Alex. A champion on the racetrack, now a proven sire with 52 black type horses, 13 graded winners, 30 black type winners, and progeny earnings of $32 million. His seven Grade 1 winners include Breeders' Cup Juvenile winner Texas Red, Florida Derby hero Materiality, Travers winner of Fleet Express, and Charleray, a game winner of the Grade 1 Del Mar Oaks. On the racetrack, a Fleet Alex was a precocious two-year-old, winning his first four starts, including the Grade 1 Hopeful. At three, he dominated the Preakness and Belmont Stakes, winning by a combined 11 3/4 lengths. A Fleet Alex, standing at Gainesway.
Power, passion, performance. You know I'm talking about Gainesway Farm.
My name is Abel Escanos. Listen to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on the Horse Racing Radio Network. This freaky fast performance is brought to you by your Lexington, Kentucky area Jimmy Johns.
Danzig Connection, Ferdinand John's Treasure vying for the lead. Mugambo is back into fourth as they approach the top of the stretch. Danzig Connection has a neck in front. On the outside, Ferdinand and John's Treasure, they enter the stretch. Danzig Connection still leads narrowly. Ferdinand on the outside, challenging that lead. Farther out is John's Treasure. On the rail is Personal Flag, moving into fourth as Danzig Connection now draws clear. This is going to be the fifth Belmont for Woody Stevens. John's Treasure on the outside of Ferdinand. Danzig Connection has the lead.
Marshall Cassidy with the call of the 1986 Belmont Stakes. 30 years ago, Danzig Connection gave Hall of Fame trainer Woody Stevens his fifth consecutive win in the Test of the Champion, a feat that it's hard to believe would ever be equaled. And boy, what a performance that afternoon. Chris McCarron was the jockey, and hard to believe it's been 30 years since Danzig Connection pulled off that feat right here at Belmont Park in Elmont, New York. That's where, of course, we are positioned, getting set for the Belmont Stakes this afternoon. Mike Penna, Jude Feld, that's Baron and Pontiff, and now the voice of Keeneland Racecourse, Kurt Becker, and retired jockey, now racehorse owner Jeff Bloom, part of our coverage team this afternoon as our Belmont Day coverage kicks off 2 o'clock Eastern. That coverage presented by visitbarbados.org. And guys, what's up? Happy Belmont Day, Kurt Becker.
Well, it's good to be part of it again this year. It's a fun week. They have a lot of festivities building up to this big day, and it's just excited to get things going later this afternoon and see how everything unfolds.
You know, when you finally get here to the Belmont, it seems as though it's been just months and months leading up to this race, the Belmont Stakes, considering we started not really that long ago with the Kentucky Derby, but certainly fun to have a deep, robust field running in the Belmont Stakes this year.
Well, we've got I think really Derby season starts when the Breeders' Cup Juvenile is run.
and we start the countdown anyways.
Yeah, well, you know, you get those horses in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, and they're all, you know, looking good, and everybody's, you know, trying to pick out their favorite for Derby season. And then, you know, it just seems like it goes really fast in between. But now when you look back at the Breeders' Cup, and Kurt, you can speak to this because you called the races at Keeneland that day. I mean, that seems like 100 years ago,
yeah,
right?
It's incredible. It is. The time passes so quickly, and yet you look back, and it's amazing how much things can change in the span of that 6 months or so. You will see 2-year-olds that develop early. They are mature. They almost look like 3-year-olds during the fall of their juvenile campaign. And then you've got other horses that just continue to physically and mentally mature and kind of grow into this role during the springtime classics. Exaggerator is a good example of that. I mean, this was a horse. He was always a nice colt as a 2-year-old. He was knocking on the door, and he was close. But it's been fun to watch him, just as one example, come and put everything together.
You talk about time and how it doesn't, kind of sometimes you look back and you say, boy, it's been that long since the Breeders' Cup. It seems like forever ago. But we heard that clip of Danzig Connection winning for Woody Stevens, and I said, it's hard to believe it's been 30 years. Some people will say, well, no, it seems like it's been 130 years because, that feat was so ridiculously incredible. Dwayne Lucas had a stretch from 1994 to 96 where he won the race 3 consecutive years with Tabasco Cat, Thunder Gulch, and Editor's Note, respectively. We thought, okay, well, maybe Dwayne can pull it off, but that just puts it in perspective as to how difficult it is to win 5 consecutive Belmonts.
Well, think about it. Just to have a horse of that caliber that can compete at that level against the best 3-year-olds in the country, and then talk about the uniqueness of the Belmont Stakes. If you've run in the Kentucky Derby and the Preakness, it takes its toll on a horse. I mean, it takes a lot of a horse to run against those kinds of horses in those kinds of races. And then 1.5 miles. I mean, how many more times is a horse going to run 1.5 miles in their lifetime? It's just such a unique distance. And so for a trainer to be able to have that kind of run that Woody Stevens has is remarkable when you think about it.
What made Woody so good, JT?
Patience, and not really worrying about what other people thought. I mean, he trained his horses kind of the way that he wanted to, what he thought was best. I remember when I was younger, when that was going, I was definitely younger 30 years ago. I'd like to have Throwback Thursday and go back to that. I cut the past performances out, the racing form after that race. They printed the past performances of all of his Belmont winners in the form. And I cut that out, and I had that in my desk every day that I trained horses, just in case I got a horse for the Belmont Stakes.
Wow.
Yeah. I don't have it anymore, but I don't train horses anymore.
Remember Baffert told us last year that he would do that same thing. He would go back and he would see how a guy like Billy Turner trained Seattle Slough. He would go back and look at Woody Stevens and at what he did coming up here. And he went back and looked at all the Triple Crown winning trainers and tried to determine the best way to bring a horse into the Belmont Stakes. Like, Bob Baffert needs any help, right? But he did. I mean, here's a Hall of Famer that went back and looked at that.
I'll give you an example of why Bob Baffert did that, why I did it, why I'm sure other people did it too. But I was cleaning out the garage with my dad one day, and I found this pamphlet, and it said, How to Be a Good Father, and it said 5 cents on it. And I said to my dad, I said, you bought this pamphlet? And he said, yeah. I said, you paid 5 cents for it? How good of advice could that be? He goes, well, do you think I'm a good father? And I said, yeah. He says, well, then it was worth it, wasn't it? And it was a good lesson for me, that you can get information and learn things from all different sources, And it's like you don't want to make any mistakes if you get to that level. And if you have horses like Bob has horses at that level, you want to make sure that you take every advantage, you know what you're doing when you get there. And, my brother Bob and I, we used to cut charts out of all of Charlie Whittingham's stakes winners and stuff and put them in a spiral notebook. And, we were very serious about this game. And that's why, sometimes when we win a big race, like when Miss Temple City won the Grade One, you look back on that, at least I do and my brother does, and all the work that we did to get to that point. And it's not like you just wake up in the morning and you win a race. It's a lifetime's work. It's not just, a matter of luck necessarily. A luck's involved in everything. And of course, as Jeff pointed out, in this skein of wins in the Belmont for Woody Stevens, it's, amazing to even have a horse of that caliber, then to be able to get them ready and then be able to have them win 5 years in a row it's probably one of those never be broken records. I mean, in today's day and age, especially, it's almost impossible to even fathom that that would happen.
Let's flip it around and look at this afternoon's race. You have a guy like Keith DeSormo who comes in having won his first Triple Crown event in the Preakness 3 weeks ago. Now he comes here with Exaggerator looking for his first win in the Belmont Stakes. Kurt, on paper, Exaggerator looks like he has a huge advantage over his competition.
He is a horse who really seems to have peaked at the right time, and there are still critics, or at least people that don't like chalk. They don't want to go with favorites, and I've heard some folks comment, you know, that they still think that he is vulnerable, and of course any horse is vulnerable on any given day, but I think the key for him, if among those who still might be skeptical, at least can Exaggerator win here again today, the fact that the weather's good, at least at this point. There could be some rain in the forecast later today.
Yeah, 50-50.
It is. And I'm curious to see. I would love to see this horse on a fast track today, because that seems to be the one point that folks bring up when they say, well, you know, his biggest races he's run in his lifetime have been muddy or sloppy racetracks. It was the case in his biggest win as a juvenile. It was the case, of course, at Pimlico. It was the case at Santa Anita. Personally, if you wanted to pin me down, I don't think it matters. I don't think he needs to have an off track, as they say, in order to win this race today. If it does open up, if we do get rain by post time, it certainly benefits him probably more than any other, but I don't think he needs that.
Well, yeah, no, I would agree with you, Kurt, in that, you know, good horses will run over broken glass, that old saying. And Exaggerator's a good horse. Does he have to win? He doesn't have to win, but certainly you have to respect the horse. And on paper, he's the horse that should win the race. But there are some other horses in this race that look like they could potentially improve in a race like we have this afternoon. And also, you know, with an off track, we know that Exaggerator isn't going to get hurt by it. There may be some horses that don't care for the off going, so that could be an advantage for him. But
I think it definitely helps him, doesn't it? Doesn't he move up? He's better on
the
off track.
Well, he really likes it.
He does
whereas
like
other
it,
horses don't.
And that's the big difference right there. But I think you also have an improving horse in Exaggerator. And if you do see a fast track later this afternoon, you're going to see the same Exaggerator, right? I mean, I think so. Now, big question mark, mile and a half. Well, what horse is a mile and a half horse? Look at pedigree, sure, you take that into account. You look at a horse's running style. You look how they come into a race. But it's a distance that none of these horses have had to do. And I'll tell you what, when these horses are coming down that stretch and they've gone already a mile and a quarter and they've had some pressure, they've been in a tight spot, you're going to see what horse really wants to win this race at a mile and a half.
Quick question, Jeff, regarding Exaggerator, because you were standing down by the rail yesterday and saw him come onto the racetrack and he walked by. I had snapped a picture and put it out on social media, and a former standardbred trainer who loves the thoroughbred game and likes to follow it, his observation was he said he looks like he might be tucking up a little bit and he might be vulnerable to a fresh horse at a mile and a half. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, you know, I think Exaggerator is not a horse that's going to wow you as a physical. You know, he's just kind of what we would say is a horse. He's just sort of average looking, and there isn't anything really spectacular about him. But what I did like in what we saw, the way he came onto the track and the way he went off the track, was he went out there and trained. He went through a regular gallop, and he was full of himself. He was taking a nice hold, and when he came off the track, it didn't appear to me that the horse had any sort of anxious bones or anxious nerves in his body. He wasn't real hot. And it's not like it was super cold, you know, for training. So, I mean, the horse looks to be in good shape, and it doesn't look as though the previous races have taken anything out of him.
Well, you know, we're going to know the answer to all those questions at 6:37 Eastern, or just a couple of minutes after that, because that is post time for the Belmont Stakes. Our coverage beginning 2 o'clock Eastern time, 2 to 5, will bring you coverage of the undercard presented by visitbarbados.org. 5 o'clock Eastern, we segue into that coverage of Belmont 148 in partnership with NBC Sports and Westwood One. You can visit our website, horseracingradio.net, for a broadcast schedule, listing of affiliates, SiriusXM channel information, and don't forget you can stream us worldwide each and every time we're on the air at horseracingradio.net. Guys, appreciate it. We're looking forward to catching up with you this afternoon. And our colleague Tom Leach, the voice of the UK Wildcats, is going to be part of that show too.
Should be fun.
Looking forward to it.
Should be a lot of fun. All right, we're going to get to another break. We'll come back. We're going to hear from Hall of Famer John Velasquez as he talks about what it's like to ride Big Sandy. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for the Triple Crown.
What's on your mind, kid? Make it fast.
I'd like to work here at Jimmy John's, world's greatest gourmet sandwich shop, sir.
Why do you want to work at Jimmy John's, kid?
I'm perfect for Jimmy John's.
Doing what?
Delivery.
Delivery?
Delivery.
We deliver pretty fast here at Jimmy John's.
That's what I heard.
What'd you hear?
You deliver pretty fast here at Jimmy John's.
Then you heard right.
I'm a fast study, sir.
You know the Jimmy John's slogan?
The Jimmy John's slogan.
Jimmy John's slogan is sub so fast you'll freak.
Sub so fast you'll freak is a swell slogan, sir.
When people call for a Jimmy John's sandwich, they want it fast.
Then I'm your man, sir.
How so?
Because I'm fast.
Fast at what?
Fast at everything.
Can you deliver fast?
I can deliver fast.
How fast?
I can run a 440 in 220.
Minutes?
No seconds.
That's fast. You deliver before?
I delivered newspapers before.
Were you fast?
Very fast.
How fast?
People got tomorrow's paper today.
That's fast.
So do I have the job?
Not so fast. How do I know you're not just some fast talker?
I can get your references.
When?
Now.
These are good references.
Thank you.
But at Jimmy John's, you got to be more than fast.
More than fast.
You got to be polite.
Fast and polite.
Fast and polite.
I can do fast and polite.
Okay, give me some time to think it over.
Okay.
Okay, I thought it over. When can you start?
Now.
Now is good. What's your name, kid?
Stefan Avalapadopoulos.
Too long. How about Ed?
That's fine.
Welcome aboard, Ed.
Jimmy John's. Exceptional delivery. Order online at jimmyjohns.com.
Airdrie Studs Cairo Prince, the most expensive yearling from the great Pioneer of the Nile's debut crop and a top-class juvenile winning the Grade 2 Nashua before his memorable battle with Eclipse Champion Honor Code in the Remsen. At 3, Cairo Prince was simply sensational in the Grade 2 Holy Bull Stakes, making him the early book favorite for the Kentucky Derby.
Cairo Prince has run away! Cairo Prince and Luis Saez with an emphatic win in the Holy Bull!
Airdrie Studs Cairo Prince. Think about it.
A two-year-old debut winner.
Danza and Permanent Captain streaking under the line together, and Danza wins by a hard-fought half length.
A grade one winning in classic place three-year-old.
Danza, in a sparkling performance, is making short work of the Arkansas Derby field. Danza is the boss as he wins by five.
Danza, new for 2016 at Spendthrift Farm. Visit SpendthriftFarm.com.
Have you been looking for high quality, consistent, and palatable hay, along with a company that offers personal service and attention? Well, your search is over. Washington Hay Company has been feeding your dream for more than 25 years with only the highest quality hay. Their three-tie red, white, and blue string certifies their hay is the finest premium Western Timothy and alfalfa, direct from Washington State. And with delivery to Keeneland, Churchill Downs, and farms in Central Kentucky, Washington Hay Company is feeding your dream. Learn more by following Washington Hay Company on Facebook today. It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
A dazzling cavorting in the Ruffian.
Cavorting scored another Graded Stakes victory, taking the Grade 2 Ruffian at Belmont on May 14th, topping an all-Bernardini Exacta in the Ruffian, with Carumba finishing second. Racing fans can look forward to the rematch between these two top fillies this afternoon in the Grade 1 Ogden Phipps right here at Belmont Park. Cavorting is your Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week. Darley Stallion Bernardini, a proven sire of both the Superstar Racehorse and the Sales Ring Smash. A Travers winner who sired Travers winners in his first two crops, Bernardini comes off a tremendous year in 2015, siring four Grade 1 winners, second only to Tappet, and leads all sires by percentage of graded winners to starters in 2016, ahead of both Tappet and Uncle Mo. Cavorting is one of seven graded winners for her sire this year. Learn more about Bernardini and all the Darley Stallions by visiting DarleyAmerica.com.
Hi, I'm Richard Migliori, and I love listening to Horse Racing Radio Network. Good night, Barbados.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
It's been a bit of a challenge, and of course being thrust into the spotlight is, I'm not accustomed to that. We had our Texas Reds and our Swipes and other good horses, but never with this obvious media pressure. So this is new, but I'll gladly change and take it, try to change, because this is what we've worked for. This is a triple crown. So yeah, it's fun but challenging.
Trainer Keith DeSormo talking with the media earlier this week at Belmont Park, talking about what it's been like to go through this triple crown with Exaggerator. A bit different for him, but he's getting used to it. I'm sure he'll gladly accept it if he can win the Belmont Stakes later this afternoon. Again, post time for the Belmont, 6:37 Eastern Time. He gives a leg up to his Hall of Fame brother. That's jockey Kent DeSormo. He will be riding alongside Hall of Famer John Velasquez, who took the time to talk with me earlier this week, and he talked about what it's like to ride here at Big Sandy.
Riding at Belmont is very unique because a mile and a half. I mean, obviously, every track in the United States is not as big as this one, and it's very deceiving. By the time you get to the backstretch and every track in America, it's a three-quarter pole. Actually, here it's a mile and a half. So by the time you get to the backstretch, we still have that's the mile pole. You know what I mean? So it's a long way from the mile pole to the three-quarter pole to the half-mile pole, if you will. So it's a long way that you have to be really patient to ride the mile and a half here. Yeah.
What's the key to making sure that you time your move correctly?
That answer was... that question I had it before, and the same things, like, you know, you have to read your horse, basically. You know, you have to know how much horse you have underneath of you, and sometimes you're not sure if you do have that much horse underneath of you, and you really don't want to make a premature move. On the other hand, if you have a horse that's eager to go, you know, so he's telling you that he's ready to go, so now you have to, okay, at least I know I have some horse, so let me wait. On the other hand, if you don't feel that the horse is not telling you, not going anywhere, and so you really have to be more patient, though, you know, because now you really, you know, have to save more horse because you're not sure if you have any horse to go anywhere. So it's really about what the horse is telling you, and obviously it's a mile and a half and where you are at the racetrack, you know. So now you're in the back straight, and, you know, it's a long way, so you better be patient to ask your horse to do anything, and if you have horse that is eager to go somewhere, now you have to be patient as well, not let him go too soon. So it's about reading your horse.
How much different is it when the race is a mile and a half long?
It's like it's a big difference. So, you know, obviously, in the three-year-olds, they never run little to no. You know, they only run a mile and a quarter and the Kentucky Derby. So now coming to a mile and a half, they're only three-year-olds. They haven't run that distance. So you have to be very patient.
What do you remember about the first couple of times you came to Belmont Park and started riding here? Look back on those days. What was it like?
Yeah, first time when I came here in 1990, I went to Aqueduct. So, you know, it was with things. But I did work horses here. and it was amazing, though, you know, just to come in and look at the racetrack and not knowing what the heck where you are. Because really, especially when you come for the first time and breeds and horses, it's very deceiving, and you don't know where the poles are. You don't know where exactly where you are, and it's very confusing, definitely. Yeah, you don't really kind of grasp, just like, damn, this thing is big, you know, where I'm going to start to breeze or where I'm going to start to, you know, to get going my horse. So it's definitely a learning experience.
Because of all the reasons you just laid out, they say jockeys can get lost going around Belmont because it's so massive. What does that mean, get lost here at Belmont Park? And did you ever get lost?
Exactly that, getting lost. Because, you know, here's the thing. When you're competitive and horses are competitive and all other people are kind of watching one another and you try to make a move in the backstretch, whatever it may be, you're like, well, that's the horse to beat. Let me put some pressure on that horse. And all of a sudden, the horse or the guy who's riding on the other horse, well, they're moving now. So they get in a hurry and they start moving in the backstretch and not knowing that, wait, we have a long way to go. And that's what you mean, you get lost. Like, you basically, you know, you start paying attention to be competitive and somebody's putting pressure on you. And then you all of a sudden change your mind. Oh, I got to go, and press the button. Or you ask your horse to do something where you didn't want to do it. So it happens a lot.
Hall of Famer John Velasquez talking about riding here at Belmont and talking about jockeys getting lost. We hear it an awful lot with this mile and a half oval. I asked Jeff Bloom to stick around. He's a former jockey. All right, Jeff, a quarter pole is a quarter pole. A half mile pole is a half mile pole. How do you get lost? It's a racetrack.
It happens. I'll tell you, when I first came back here with my apprenticeship, I was working horses over the Belmont track. You get lost out there because the configuration is so unlike any other typical mile racetrack. And you're right, the quarter pole is the quarter pole, but it's in a really different place in terms of coming out of that backstretch. You know, and I also thought it was interesting, you know, listening to Johnny, because I was going to echo his comments about, you know, what's different about riding over the Belmont Park track. You know, it's the key is patience, but more importantly, knowing your horse, because every horse is different, and you want to make sure that you adjust accordingly on this track. But another piece to the puzzle is, you know, you have other riders in that race, and here's what might happen. You got a rider that doesn't know this track real well, and they sort of force your hand a little bit, and they start moving. Well, you don't want to let them get first run, but at the same time, you don't want to sit back and wait too long, you know, because your horse has got to stay with that horse. So there, it's definitely a rider's race, and having experience over the Belmont Park track, I believe, is a huge advantage in a race like the Belmont Stakes.
Well, the quarter pole is a quarter mile from the wire, regardless of where you are. But it's not the quarter pole. It's like the half-mile pole, the 5/8 pole, the three-quarter pole. That's more likely where you're going to get lost because it's in a totally different place. And even the horses, I think, probably get a little lost too. They're used to turning down the backside and maybe, you know, turning it up a little bit. And it's a whole different kettle of fish.
Yeah, kind of like a game of chess in some ways. You're watching the other riders. They're watching you, and you're trying to – and that's the other thing. You have to not get caught up in that aspect of it as well, right?
And that's what's going to happen, Mike. You're going to have riders out there that are going to, I'm not going to say panic, but they're not going to be familiar with this racetrack as some of the others. And they're going to force the hand a little bit of some of the other riders that, you know, may use up their horse a little bit more than they would like earlier in the race.
All right, well, don't forget that the Belmont comes up this afternoon, but racing continuing at Woodbine in Canada in 2016 marks the 60-year anniversary of thoroughbred racing at Woodbine. And tomorrow, June 12th, you can watch and wager on the Woodbine Oaks. Woodbine will guarantee the early and late pick four pools at $100,000 on Plate Trial and Oaks Day, and will be offering a special 20-cent bet minimum on all Triactor, Superfecta, Pick 3, and Pick 4 pools tomorrow afternoon. But that's not all. You can try your luck with the Thoroughbred Pick 5, now guaranteed at $50,000 weekdays, Saturdays, and Sundays starting June 11th. For more information, visit WoodbineRacetrack.com. We're back with hour number two here on the Equine Forum right after we pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Nyquist and Exaggerator, they're coming to the line together. And Nyquist is still unbeaten. He has won the Kentucky Derby.
Brody's Paws at the 16th pole. Chased by Cherry Wine. My Man Sam running huge from last. But Brody's Paws in front. Brody's Paws for Luis Saez to win the Toyota Bluegrass.
And it's Mohamed who has taken the lead on the outside. Mohamed to the front. Pulling away from Zulu Fellowship is third as Mohamed pulls away.
But Exaggerator is finishing with conviction this afternoon. Exaggerator, an absolutely brilliant victory in the Santa Anita Derby.
Now, here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Welcome back. Hour number two of the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Baron and Pontiff, that's Mike Penna and Jude Feld, with you at Belmont Park in Elmont, New York, getting set for the 148th running of the Belmont Stakes. The test of the champion comes up later this afternoon at 6:37 Eastern time. We'll have all the coverage for you beginning at 2 o'clock Eastern with our undercard coverage presented by visitbarbados.org, and then, of course, our coverage of the Belmont in partnership with NBC Sports and with Westwood One. We encourage you to go to horseracingradio.net for a listing of affiliates, SiriusXM information, and to listen online worldwide, all at horseracingradio.net.
163 countries.
Remarkable.
Remarkable.
It's cool.
Very cool. It's amazing when you think about it. I mean, yeah, every time I say it, because people say, "Oh, you know, where do you go? How do we, you know, tune in? What stations are you on? All that stuff." And when those words come out of my mouth, 163 different countries, I go, "Wow, that's impressive."
Yeah, and of course, you can go back to our website, listen to podcasts of all of our programs, including this show at 10 o'clock Eastern. We'll have a podcast up there for you. If you missed any of our interview with Aaron Grider in the first half of the show, the clip from John Velasquez talking about riding here at Belmont Park, or any of the interviews coming up here in hour number two, simply go to our website, horseracingradio.net, and check out the podcast. Speaking of those interviews, Petra Roach is with Barbados Tourism. Well, she joined us earlier this week. We're going to hear from her coming up momentarily. Todd Pletcher took the time to visit with myself and Kurt Becker earlier this week. That interview comes up at 9:25 Eastern time, and then Dora Delgado from the Breeders' Cup will be here at 9:40 Eastern. Don't forget two Winning Your In Breeders' Cup Challenge races on the docket for today with the Met Mile and with the Ogden Phipps, and those part of our undercard coverage later today beginning at 2 o'clock Eastern time. The poll question? Go to @HRN on Twitter and weigh in now. You can have Exaggerator or the field. Who do you got in today's Belmont Stakes? @HRN on Twitter, we want to hear from you. JT, I mentioned that Petra took the time to visit with us and talked all about Barbados and how great it is and all the different things you can do when you're in Barbados. And here's that interview with Petra Roach. Petra Roach is the director of U.S. Barbados Tourism Marketing, and she joins us now on the Equine Forum here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Petra, appreciate the time.
Thank you so much, Mike and Jude. Really lovely to be here.
Well, let me tell you something. Jude considers himself to be the unofficial ambassador to Barbados here in the United States. He's been there on multiple occasions. I had the chance to go down for the first time earlier this season when we broadcast the Sandy Lane Gold Cup in early March. And I don't know why anybody would want to go anywhere else, especially if you're a fan of horse racing and you like that Caribbean atmosphere. Barbados has to be number one on everybody's list.
I agree with you, and that's not just because I'm Barbadian. I think, you know, when you leave the U.S. and you land in Barbados, it's as though all the stress of everyday life is just taken away from you. The Barbadian people, they're our biggest assets. They're warm, they're friendly, they're welcoming. I think it's like a very safe island. It's a very easy island to get around, and there is so much for people to do. I always say, you know, whether it is that you want to go on a budget holiday or you want to go on a very extravagant holiday, there is something for everybody. So for me, it's like I arrive there. The first thing I need to do is go into this, one of the little rum shops. I want to get my shot of rum. I want to play dominoes. I want to hear the cadence of people, of the language. I want to see people smiling. I want to smell, you know, the earth around me and the colors and the everything is just almost perfection. And I always say that the great thing about Barbados is that we've got the authenticity of the Caribbean combined with a little bit of sophistication. So, you know, if people want to go and just lie on the beach and do nothing for the week or the 2 weeks that they're there, then that's fine. But if people want to get up and get around, you know, they can go and watch polo. We've got one of the biggest and most exciting polo calendars of anywhere in the Caribbean. If they want to go and watch horse racing like you did, you know, down at the Garrison Savannah, which is a turf track, but the excitement and, you know, it's all about everybody bringing out their picnic baskets, or if you're staying up in the suites, it's about putting on the greatest hat. And it's a very convivial atmosphere. In Barbados, it's all about having fun, having enjoyment. You know, it's about leaving all those worries behind and just immersing yourself in just enjoyment. So, as I said, polo, horse racing, if you're into aquatic adventure, if you want to do windsurfing, kite surfing, stand-up paddleboarding, just surfing, if you want to go to race around the car track, we've got one of the best circuits in the Caribbean, which is called the Bushy Park Racetrack. And that is amazing because you can get into one of the radicals and you can drive around and you can, you know, compete against your family or your friends. So there's loads for people to do. If you want to go and see the underwater world and you're not a diver, then you can go down in the Atlantis submarine. If you want to see the interior of the island and get away from the coastline, then you can go on one of our jeep safaris. You know, there's something for everybody. And I think it's also great for multi-generational travel because when we go, you know, it's my mom, it's her mom, it's my kids, you know, and everybody just has, there's something for every segment of every age demographic, really. So I know that you had a great time because of the rum. And I don't know if most people are aware that Barbados is the home of rum. It is Mount Gay, which is the rum that invented rum. But apart from that, we've got R.L. Steele, we've got Coxburgh. We've got a whole dearth of other rums that are there. And the rum is spectacular, as I'm sure that you can attest to.
Well, there's no question about that. And when we were together down at Barbados Comes to Atlanta, they had the rum sampling. And I think that might have been the most popular booth at the market that day. Everybody was trying it out and finding their favorites. And they had quite a tremendous selection from all of the different brands in Barbados. But the rum is fantastic, and as you said, it reminded me the first time I went to Barbados and I got off the plane, and I just felt like I was home. Everything just, you know, melted away, like you said. And then the smells, as I was driving to my my villa that was on the coast in St. James. I was just overtaken by the smell of the flowers and the sea air and the land. It's just you can't describe
magical.
It to people. And I was so happy that I got to share that with Mike and his wife and my wife when we came down for the Gold Cup, because I've been bragging about Barbados for many, many years, and they finally got to see that I wasn't just telling a story. It was really what I had advertised.
You know, we keep trying to figure out what it is that makes Barbados so special, because there are loads of places which have, you know, the beautiful sea, they've got lovely sand, they've got great weather. But it is that combination of everything that you can do. It's that, you know, the enthusiasm and the warm welcome that the Bajan people give to everybody that they come into contact with, and the safety of the island. You know, you can walk around anywhere. And actually, we always say to people, you're missing out so much if you stay just within the hotel. It's about getting out and discovering the history and the culture, and actually enjoying that experience with the locals. I think that that's really special in my mind.
Well, Petra, we have people tuning in all over the United States, all over the world. Listeners in more than 163 countries have made the Horse Racing Radio Network their home for racing coverage over the past year. And when you look at what you've done here in the United States with attracting people to Barbados as a vacation destination, as a potential racing destination, whatever it might be, you've made it so convenient now where there are several markets in the United States that people can fly to Barbados from. Tell me a little bit about that.
So we've got three carriers which fly into Barbados from the U.S. We've got Out of Atlanta, Delta, and that flies twice weekly on Wednesdays and Saturdays into the island. We've then got JetBlue, which is flying out of Boston, and that's a winter season. That's a winter program. We actually are going to start back on November the 4th, and then it will go year-round on Saturdays and Sundays. We've got daily service with JetBlue out of Fort Lauderdale, and then we've also got twice daily service with JetBlue out of New York. And the interesting thing is that out of both Boston and New York, we've got the Mint Lie Flatbed service with JetBlue, which is absolutely spectacular. It's about sinking into your wonderful mint seat, and you can lie down and sleep for the 4.5 hours from New York and Boston that it takes to get to Barbados. And then out of Miami and Charlotte, we've got service with American Airlines. So Miami is twice daily, and Charlotte is once a week. So it's really convenient. If you're coming from the West Coast, there is perfect connectivity either through Miami, Atlanta, Fort Lauderdale, or New York. And again, Midwest, most people go through the Miami or the Fort Lauderdale area. So very, very convenient. And Barbados is, we say that it's a little bit further away, but that means that it's just that much more special. The thing is that we're not a mass tourism destination. We believe that every visitor's experience should be individual. It should be what they want out of a holiday. And that's really important to us. It's not this conveyor belt system, you know, or queuing up with 200 other people. It's about that personal interaction with Barbados that we think is very, very, very special.
Yeah, you know, one of the best parts of our latest trip was when we went to go visit Sir David Seal at his distillery, and the first words out of his mouth were, "Welcome to the best place on earth." And that's very typical of the people that live in Barbados. And although it's a small island, only 21 miles long and 14 miles wide, the people are very welcoming and very interested in you as a person. It's very yeah. unique in that regard, and super, super safe. You know, a lot of Caribbean islands don't have that safety factor that a lot of people in the United States would prefer. But when you go to Barbados, it's just first class all the way. It's a very, very classy place to be, and people enjoy their time there because they're not being hounded on street corners and whatever. It's just a very pleasant atmosphere.
Talking with Petra Roach, Barbados Tourism, here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Petra, when you travel around the country and you talk to different people about Barbados, what is What are some of the key things that you want them to know when you have the chance to talk with them?
I think one of the most important things, as we mentioned before, is that Barbados is a very safe and welcoming island. That's really important. The second thing is that there is loads for people to do when they're on the island. It's not just about the sun, sand, and sea, but there is a well-developed infrastructure of activities. So whether it's that they want to do the kitesurfing, the windsurfing, whether they want to do polo, whether they want to do horse racing or motor racing. And I think another one of the very special assets that we have is that it's the culinary capital. You know, whether it is that you want to go into Oystens, which is a big fishing village where we have a fish fry on Fridays and Saturdays, and you get a wonderful plate of, you know, grilled fish with some local breadfruit and sweet potato and salad, and that's $10 to $15 US. Or you can go to the other end of the spectrum where you've got restaurants like Chin Chin and Champers and Tapas. And my pièce de résistance is the Cliff and the Cliff Beach Club, where you've got these wonderful restaurants majestically set in a sort of cliffside setting with flambeaux going out of the side. And it's absolutely romantic and magical, and the food is sublime. You're talking about food that you put into your mouth and it's just, you know, mouth-watering, delectable, you know, experience. And then they feed, the water's so crystal clear below, and they normally feed the fish, and the fish come up and you've got the stingrays and the barracudas, and it's absolutely magical. It's quite difficult to describe, but you sort of immerse yourself where you think, oh my gosh, life just could not get any better. And again, I think one of the most important things for me when I'm on holiday is that I want to feel that I'm in an island or in a destination where people are appreciative that I'm there, where they're happy to share their destination, their home with me. And I think that's one of the really special things that happens in Barbados, where people are happy to share Barbados with visitors. We always say we don't have tourists, we have visitors, because we want it to be your home away from home for the time that you're there. And I think that that's a feeling that really you can't put a price tag on it.
Well, Petra, it's very hard to describe, and you've done a great job painting that picture. We will continue to do the same thing here on the network. We can't wait to get back again next March for the Sandy Lane Gold Cup. It's just an amazing experience, and I know you've made huge believers of us. Ken Ramsey, leading owner here in the United States, can't wait to get back there again next year. He's become a gigantic fan of Barbados, and he's kind of an ambassador for you here in the States as well. It's a magical place, as you mentioned, and how can people get more information if they want to learn more about going to Barbados, about the island, about the culture? How can they find out more?
So we've got an amazing website which has just been relaunched. So if they go to www.visitbarbados.org, that's www.visitbarbados.org, or they can call us in the office in New York, which is 212-551-4350. 212-551-4350.
And we should also mention visitbarbados.org, the title sponsor of our Belmont Stakes undercard coverage, as well as our Saturdays at Saratoga coverage later this summer, and our coverage of the Breeders' Cup World Championships in early November at Santa Anita in Arcadia, California. Can't thank you enough for that support, Petra. Really do appreciate it, and continued success with Barbados Tourism. We'll continue to promote that for you here as well.
Thank you so much, Mike and Jude, and we are totally appreciative of everything that you're doing for Barbados. Thank you.
Thanks. All right, Petra Roach, Barbados Tourism, joining us earlier this week, and some great stuff there, JT, and really she paints the picture beautifully, as she should. She's a native of Barbados, but you think about what we experienced there going down for the Gold Cup, and I know you had been there before. It's my first visit. I really, really am so excited about the opportunity to head back next year and broadcast the Sandy Lane Gold Cup for a second consecutive year.
Yeah, it's just a wonderful place to be, and I can't say enough nice things about it. For me, it's like my second country. I really believe in the place. I love going there. And, you know, let's talk about the racing for a minute because we didn't really touch on the racing.
Yep.
And our crew here is our listeners are racing fans. You know, it's a sport in Barbados. The owners can't make a lot of money. The purses aren't huge. But they spend a lot of money to bring horses into Barbados to race. The racing programs are very competitive. It's a fun track to bet. It's a 6-furlong turf course. They run right-handed, European style. Very exciting races. Top jockeys. We've had several jockeys come out of Barbados. The most notable lately, Patrick Husbands, who does very, very well. Been the leading rider at Woodbine for a while. And just a very competitive racing environment, and the fans love the game there. People come out, of course, Sandy Lane Gold Cup Day, the whole country stops for Sandy Lane Gold Cup pretty much. Everybody that can make the race is there.
Yeah.
Has 2 hours and a half getting out of there. It was like leaving Belmont Park after the Belmont. But it's just an amazing day, Sandy Lane Gold Cup Day. But racing there anytime is really, really enjoyable. They race every other Saturday. Pretty much they take a little break in the fall. So check your calendar. You can go to BarbadosTurfClub.org and see what the racing calendar is like. Once in a while, you'll get rained out. I always try to schedule a trip so I'm there for maybe 3 Saturdays. So if you miss one, and a lot of times they'll just have the races the next Saturday if you miss one, but at least schedule 2 Saturdays for your trip so you got a good shot of going to the races. It doesn't rain all that much, and they very seldom cancel a card, but it's just a great experience there. There's so many other things to do. There's great museums. The oldest Jewish synagogue in North America is there. Cool place to visit. All the rum distilleries, exciting to go there and see how rum is made and taste some really, really good rums. he's laughing because Sir David Seal gave us 2 cases, which we tried to polish off before we left. But
we did a number on those 2 cases, too, by the way.
We actually brought some home. It was nice.
You know, let's face it. That's the other thing. If you want to take the family there, it's a great vacation destination. They have the ocean, the beaches, which are spectacular, the turquoise water of the Caribbean. You have that combined with the horse racing. Go to visitbarbados.org, check it out, see what you think. We can't recommend it any more than we are right now because it is simply spectacular. And, again, we can't wait to get back there. Hey, HRN Nation, come with us. Let's go to the Sandy Lane Gold Cup next year. It'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah, you will not be disappointed, I guarantee you.
Nope, not at all. All right, we're going to take time out for our Blood Horse News update. Then we'll take a short commercial break, and we'll come back and hear from trainer Todd Pletcher talking about his 2 Belmont entrants, Stradivari and Destin, coming up later this afternoon. But it is time for your Blood Horse News update and a look at the top headlines from BloodHorse.com. Zayats, Baffert, they reflect on Triple Crown glory. On the afternoon of June 9th, Bob Baffert walked into the paddock at Belmont Park for the first time since saddling American Pharoah before last year's Belmont Stakes. He said, quote, "I got goosebumps." He told a crowd of about 75 people that evening, and part of a question and answer held by the New York Racing Association to celebrate American Pharoah's Triple Crown victory last year, he said, "We made history last time we came here." And that is your Blood Horse News update for this morning, brought to you each and every Saturday by BloodHorse.com. Don't forget to check out Blood Horse Daily, briefing you on important breeding, racing, and sales news. Sign up to have a PDF emailed to you in a daily newsletter, or download the app on your smartphone today. That's bloodhorse.com/daily. We'll hear from Todd Pletcher when we come back on the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Justin Phillip, a blue blood sprinter whose first crop had been highly acclaimed at the sales by the exciting young sire First Samurai and a half-brother to 3 other graded stakes winners, including Algorithms and Grade 1 winning Kentucky Derby prospect Greenpoint Crusader. Justin Phillip made 32 lifetime starts, 23 in graded stakes, with 9 buyer speed figures of 100 or better.
And Justin Phillip will do it! He was a monster in the mud!
And Justin Phillip will prove best in the Cal Fleet Sprint.
But it will be Justin Phillip to win the Vanderbilt by 2.
with First Crop foals bringing up to $110,000 at the 2015 fall sales, Justin Phillip had a weanling sales average of more than $50,000, and he stands for a value price stud fee of only $5,000. Justin Phillip at Castleton Lions. Are you a believer? Visit CastletonLions.com.
And they're off to New York, the premier state-bred program in the United States. When you own a New York bred, your horse can run for more than $44 million in purses restricted to registered New York breds. And the New York program pays awards to breeders, owners, and stallion owners when their New York breds finish first, second, or third at New York tracks. We have the quality.
Day at the spa, all the way.
You have the opportunity. New York breds, get with the program. The best program.
Claiborne Farms Warfront has earned international acclaim as a champion sire. Last year, Air Force Blue won four Group 1 events on his way to being named Europe's champion two-year-old colt. While stateside, Hit It A Bomb captured the Grade 1 Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf at Keeneland. In the auction ring, Warfront's seven-figure sales included a North American record $3.2 million weanling. Warfront at Claiborne Farms.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Fans, can this year's Santa Anita Derby winner Exaggerator win today's Belmont Stakes and make it 2 out of 3 in the Triple Crown? Come early and take in all the Belmont Day excitement at spectacular Santa Anita. Admission gates open on Saturday at 8 a.m. and our first live race post time is at 12 noon. Fans, we guarantee $500,000 in the late pick four, and be sure to check out Quigley's Corner in the East Paddock Gardens at 10:50 a.m. Our special guest is trainer Doug O'Neill. Santa Anita, great racing and great value in a world-class setting.
Ramsey Farms, Kitten's Joy.
Stephanie's Kitten and Erod Ortiz Jr. for America in the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Turf.
A champion sire and producer of three Grade 1 winners in 2015.
Chiropractor March Chiropractor in a driving finish here over March.
With more than $11 million in progeny earnings this year.
Big Blue Kitten won the Joe Hirsch Turf Classic.
Kitten's Joy, standing at Ramsey Farm. Visit RamseyFarm.com.
This is Bob Baffert, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Mike Penna, Jude Fell, back with you on the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. It is Belmont Stakes Day. We kick off our coverage 2 o'clock Eastern time with the undercard, and then back at 5 o'clock Eastern to take you all the way through Belmont 148, which is set for 6:37 Eastern time. Trainer Todd Pletcher is going to be very busy. He sends out two horses with Stradivari and with Destin. Of course, Todd, a two-time Belmont winner. He saddled Rags to Riches to beat Curlin in 2007, and then Palace Malice to win in 2013. And earlier this week, Todd took the time to visit and talk about his two horses. Todd, this is a race that's been pretty good to you. You've won it twice. What's the key? Why has this race been so good?
I think part of it, it's our home court a little bit. And I think we've also had some success because we've decided in a number of cases to come in fresh with 5 weeks in between races for both Rags to Riches and Palace Malice. On the flip side of that, we've had some pretty good seconds or some pretty tough beats as well with Stay Thirsty and Commissioner and Dunkirk, you know. So we've had our fair share of seconds as well. But I think the maybe our program, the conditioning leading up to a mile and a half race works well, and a little bit of spacing in between their final prep.
Talk about that program. You mentioned that the 5 weeks coming in as a fresh horse. How big of an advantage is that?
Well, I mean, I think it's an advantage for a couple of reasons. One, I think our horses tend to run well with a little bit of space between races, and 5 weeks is ideal. And, you know, I think a lot of times, too, the horses that your main competition in the race oftentimes is run back in the Preakness. And so, you know, it's very difficult to string three races of this caliber together over a 5 week period of time.
What's the key to getting a 3 year old to peak for a mile and a half race at this time of the season?
Well, I think, you know, first of all, you have to have a horse that has a pedigree to go this distance. And, you know, in Rags to Riches' case, she was bred perfectly for this race, being by AP Indy, who was a Belmont winner, and a half-sister to Jazzle, who was a Belmont winner. I mean, I think truly, you know, pedigrees for a mile and a half on the dirt don't get any better than what she had. I think also a key is you need a horse that's going to turn off a little bit. You know, you can't be ranked going a mile and a half and pull hard in the early part of the race and not settle, not relax. So you need to get into a comfortable rhythm. You need to get into a comfortable gallop. And, you know, hopefully the two horses we have on Saturday are mentally those type of horses.
All right, Stradivari, maybe a little bit of seasoning disadvantage because he's only raced 4 times, but the horse is ultra talented. There's no doubt about that. Going into the Preakness, you were going to find out if he belonged. Does he belong?
I don't think there's any question from a talent standpoint that he belongs, you know, and I think he's got a big race and a big win ahead of him in his future. You know, whether that's going to be in the mile and a half Belmont remains to be seen. But, you know, I think he showed in the Preakness that he's legit. And, you know, I think his lack of seasoning hurt him a little bit in the Preakness. He didn't react the way you would expect a horse to react when he got hit in the face with dirt for the first time and slop. And, you know, most horses will back off the bridle, climb a little bit, and he did just the opposite. He dropped his head and he got aggressive, and so Johnny had to wrestle with him a little bit to get him settled back in the first turn. Despite that, you know, from the 11 posts in his fourth lifetime start, I thought he handled it very well. He wasn't beaten far, and, you know, I'm hoping that that's the kind of race that could bring him forward.
How about Destin? Here's a horse that does have a little bit more experience under his belt. Has only had one race in 13 weeks since the Tampa Bay Derby. By design?
Yeah, I mean, we made a conscious effort to, you know, or decision to pass a final prep in between the Tampa Derby and the Kentucky Derby. And one of the reasons was we wanted to maintain a fresh horse for, you know, the rest of the season. And, you know, we thought it would put us in the best position for the Kentucky Derby. And I still think he ran very well in the Derby. I think had he broke better from the gate and put himself in a little better position, we'd have had a closer outcome. I'm not saying he would have won, but, you know, I think he was sixth, beaten 7 lengths, and unfortunately he broke poorly and got shuffled back and ended up 10th or 11th early on, which wasn't where we wanted to be. But in spite of that, he ran well, and he's come out of it well, and he's had a good 5 weeks since the Derby.
Rags to Riches is a name you've mentioned several times. It was your first win in a Triple Crown race when Rags to Riches beat Curlin in 2007 in the Belmont. Of course, we were here doing the national coverage that day, and this place was electric, and you were too after the race. Look back on that day for a minute.
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, still probably the most exciting race that I've been involved with. You know, first of all, to have a filly win the Belmont first time in over 100 years, that in itself was exciting. But the way the race unfolded, the drama that came along with it, when she stumbled and fell on her head, you know, in my mind, she lost all chance when that happened coming out of the gate. And then to kind of get back in contention and then turn for home head and head, and you're thinking, you know, so many emotions go through your mind during the course of 2.5 minutes. But I think now you look back at it, and her and Curlin come home the last quarter in 23 and change, which you almost never see in a race like the Belmont going a mile and a half. And Curlin goes on as 2-time horse of the year. I think it was, you know, remarkable effort by any horse, but for a 3-year-old filly to do that, it was special.
Of course, she had the same colors on that Stradivari is going to be racing with on Saturday. She beats Curlin. Now you're going to try and beat a son of Curlin with Exaggerator, who's going to be the heavy favorite. The Curlins might be sick of seeing those colors if Stradivari wins again on Saturday.
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily feel too bad about that, though.
How about when you won with Palace Malice? What was that day like?
I mean, you know, any time that you win a classic, you have to covet those moments. And, you know, for me, that one was particularly satisfying because, couple of reasons. One, Dogwood has been a supporter of ours since, you know, basically the beginning of when we started training. And secondly, he was a horse that we believed in, but I don't know that the rest of the racing community really thought he was as good as we felt like he was until that day. He had some kind of troubled trips in Louisiana and, you know, just missed in the Bluegrass and was too aggressive in the Derby. And so we kind of kept saying, you know, we think this horse is good. We think he's good. And finally, you know, that day he was able to prove it. And so it was exciting for all those reasons.
I'm glad you brought up Dogwood. How about the other connections? Michael Tabor, Derek Smith, and Mrs. John Magner, longtime supporter of yours. Talk about that relationship.
You know, especially early on when you're first starting training and you get an endorsements like those from Mr. Campbell and Mr. Tabor and John Magner and those guys, you know, it's just, it's not only the horses that they're providing you with. It's sort of the, you know, the support, I think speaks volumes that, you know, if they believe in you, I think it opens up a lot of other opportunities. So, you know, I can't say enough about how much those relationships have helped my career.
Good luck on Saturday.
Thank you.
Trainer Todd Pletcher talking about those connections, talking about his horses coming up to this year's Belmont, and some great stuff there from Todd, JT.
Yeah, no, he's you know, he's always so articulate, and I loved what he said about Palace Malice. That was cool. They believed in the horse even though other people didn't, and we all know what a great career Palace Malice had and how amazing he was. He could run everything from 4.5 furlongs to 1.5 miles. Just a magnificent horse. And so that was the coolest part of the interview for me.
Kurt Becker was standing there listening to the entire interview with me at Todd's barn. And then afterwards, he asked Todd a couple of questions. And he asked him, hey, when you win big races like the Belmont, do you ever get time in this sport to really enjoy it and to celebrate? And here's what Todd had to say.
Actually, you know, the nature of our business is one that there's seemingly never a final game or a final race, or, you know, even if even I'm sure for Bob Baffert, you know, after winning the Triple Crown, you know, they're still, okay, what do we do next? And so, you know, one of the frustrating things is you don't sometimes get time to really savor those moments and enjoy them as much as you probably should. You know, because you got responsibilities to continue on, not only with that horse, but, you know, the rest of your stable. So, yeah, sometimes you don't have too much time to sit back and reflect. I think that's why a lot of times the big wins you appreciate even more years later when you do kind of have time to look back on it. And you know, of course, now you can watch replays so easily and readily that you know, every once in a while I'll do that, just kind of send it home one night and, you know, I watched the Rags to Riches Belmont not too long ago. Just pumps you up a little bit, gives you a little motivation.
What does Todd Pletcher do for fun? I mean, when you have a chance to turn the TV on, whether it's baseball this time of year, whether it's football in the fall, any particular sports that you enjoy watching as a fan?
I do. Unfortunately, I'm a pretty big Dallas Cowboys fan, so I spend a lot of time being frustrated by watching them. But yeah, I mean, I'm a sports fan. I follow the NFL, the NBA quite a bit, and you know, college sports. Generally, baseball is kind of my season to take off a little bit, mainly because Saratoga's, you know, during about 7 weeks of the heart of baseball season. And honestly, during that time, I don't have too much time to do anything else. But, yeah, I enjoy following sports.
Cowboys and the Steelers in Pittsburgh this year. You want to meet me there?
I tell you what, I spent a good part of my childhood being tortured by the Steelers. And, you know, the Cowboys and Steelers had some great teams in the 70s. And so I actually did enjoy when the Cowboys beat the Steelers. And I can't remember, 94, was it? 95?
Cut. Todd Pletcher having a little fun there. Yeah, no way he's going to start talking about the Steelers getting beat on my radio show. I can tell you that.
No, that was one of the highlights of the whole program right there.
That interview coming to an abrupt end. Kurt, one thing I thought was neat, I asked you to stop back by because you were the one asking those questions, but the thing I thought was neat is when he talked about watching replays and going back recently and popping in Rags to Riches and how he thought that it served as kind of motivation, and it was uplifting for him to watch that race again. That's pretty cool.
It is, because as Todd's career has gone on, I mean, Rags to Riches won the Belmont in 07, so that's already some 9 years in the past, and he's still has an appreciation for her and for that race. And I've talked to folks who have said that one of the things that makes Todd so good at what he does as a trainer is if you walk up to Todd and if you ask him about a horse that he has trained, doesn't even have to be a horse that was a graded stakes winner. If you ask him about a horse that may have been an allowance winner at some point, if you say, hey, I bought a broodmare prospect out of a sale and I saw where you used to train her, you know, what are your thoughts on her? That he doesn't have to go consult his notes. He doesn't have to say, well, hang on, let me call my assistant. And he will know. He will start talking to you right there on the spot, and he will tell you everything he remembers about the horse. So this is a game that means a lot to him, and the horses mean a lot to him. And you've heard him acknowledge, you know, his staff also is a huge, huge part of what he's been able to do.
Yeah, you know, sometimes when you're training and you're having a bad week or a bad month or whatever, of course, Pletcher doesn't have very many of those, but you know, I'm sure he gets down sometimes when he's not winning races, or maybe the fact that this year his horse is in the Derby and, you know, it just wasn't his year this year kind of thing. And you do that. You go back, and I used to do it. You know, I used to go back and watch some of my wins, stakes wins, and even regular races, horses that I liked. I used to have a tape of that and watch those horses. And it reminds you that you do know what you're doing, and it kind of gives you a basis for, you know, stick to what you know. Don't go crazy just because it's not your week or whatever. It's a long year. It's a long season, and hopefully it's a long life in this business. And you have to just take the bad times, but it's always good to remember that you do know what you're doing, because sometimes you start second guessing yourself if things aren't going your way, and that's when things really start going bad.
Well, Todd, hoping for another good moment later today in the Belmont Stakes with either Destin or Stradivari. He'll take either one, Kurt. Doesn't matter.
Destin is a horse that maybe is overlooked to some degree because Stradivari has run more recently in the Preakness, and Stradivari has been the horse that a lot of folks have been talking about from his barn just because he's very talented, hasn't raced much. I thought Destin ran a fantastic race in the Derby. I mean, I realize he was sixth. That's never the goal. But there was a move at the quarter pole where it looked like he was starting to come to Nyquist, and just for a minute, looking through the binoculars, one thought, ooh, this Destin could give this horse some trouble. Then as it turned out, I don't know, maybe the, you know, the 8 weeks off might have caught up to him a little bit down the stretch. But Destin's a horse I would not toss, and Stradivari is a very talented horse. Despite his lack of experience, he could be a big factor.
We'll see what happens later this afternoon. Post time for the Belmont, 6:37 Eastern time. Kurt, you'll be back with us 2 o'clock Eastern with all of our coverage, kicking off with the undercard and then all the way through Belmont 148. Appreciate it, my friend.
Looking forward to the day.
All right. We're going to take a break. We'll come back, talk some Breeders' Cup. 2 Breeders' Cup Challenge winning your in races on the docket for this afternoon. We'll do that with Dora Delgado from the Breeders' Cup next on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for the Triple Crown.
Jimmy John's World's Greatest Gourmet Sandwich is Ed speaking.
Yes, I need a sandwich delivery right away.
What kind of sandwich?
I don't care. Just get it to 215 Elm Street right now.
I'm on my way.
Jimmy John's.
Thanks for getting here so fast.
You're welcome, sir. Here's your sandwich. By the way, did you know your house is on fire?
That's why I called Jimmy John's.
Fire makes you hungry?
No, I knew you'd get here fast. Grab a bucket.
We're going to need more than 2 guys, sir.
You're right. What'll we do?
Leave it to me, sir.
Hello?
Hello, boss? Send everyone you got to 215 Elm.
Okay.
Doesn't matter what kind of sandwich, sir. I'll explain later.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
Jimmy John's. Come in.
Sir, did you know your house is on fire?
Yes, I did. Grab a bucket.
Jimmy John's.
Come in.
Sir, did you know your house is on fire?
Yes, I did. Grab a bucket.
Jimmy John's.
Come in.
Sir, did you know?
Yes, I did. Grab a bucket.
Jimmy John's.
Come in.
Sir, did you?
Yes, I did. Grab a bucket.
Fire department.
Come in.
Sir, did you know your...
It's okay, Captain. We got it handled. Care for a sandwich?
Thanks, but tell me something.
Shoot.
Why didn't you call the fire department first?
I did.
Jimmy John's. Exceptional delivery. Order online at jimmyjohns.com.
Power.
A Fleet Alex strolling home in the Preakness to win by 3.
Passion.
A Fleet Alex opening up with a tremendous burst of energy. He's 5 lengths clear at the 8th pole.
Performance.
It is Texas Red just outclassing them. Look at this for an easy one in the Breeders' Cup.
Gainsway Stallion of Fleet Alex. A champion on the racetrack, now a proven sire with 52 black type horses, 13 graded winners, 30 black type winners, and progeny earnings of $32 million. His 7 Grade 1 winners include Breeders' Cup Juvenile winner Texas Red, Florida Derby hero Materiality,
Travers winner of Fleet Express, and Charleray, a game winner of the Grade 1 Del Mar Oaks. On the racetrack, a Fleet Alex was a precocious 2-year-old, winning his first 4 starts, including the Grade 1 Hopeful. At 3, he dominated the Preakness and Belmont Stakes, winning by a combined 11 3/4 lengths. A Fleet Alex, standing at Gainesway.
Power, passion, performance. You know I'm talking about Gainesway Farm.
Lexus. Once driven, there's no going back. Through inspired design, relentless innovation, and uninhibited performance, Lexus continues their pursuit to perfection with not only precisely engineered automobiles, but powerful, profound, and passionate experiences that move you like never before. Hey everyone, Mike Pena here, and extremely proud to say that I am a Lexus owner, or better yet, a member of the Lexus family at the Lexus store of Lexington. I've told you for more than a decade that the people make the difference at the Lexus store, and that is why I am so proud to be their customer and a member of their family. If you're in the horse business, there's no reason to look anywhere else. As the sponsor of the Grade 2 Lexus Raven Run at Keeneland every fall, the team at the Lexus store of Lexington is committed to supporting the horse industry and to being the dealership of the equine industry here in Central Kentucky. See for yourself. Stop in and talk horse racing with the godfather, Tony Attiano, and all the great folks at the Lexus store of Lexington. And I promise you will love your Lexus experience.
Grade 1 millionaire Cowboy Cow is leading the third crop sire by 2-year-old winners with a dozen juvenile winners already this year. His runners have earned nearly $2 million, and his sires a greater percentage of winners than nearly any other stallion in his crop, including Pioneer of the Nile. Cowboy Cow, a grand-looking son of Giants Causeway, standing at Penn Oak Stud.
This is trainer Chad Brown, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on the Horse Racing Radio Network. This freaky fast performance is brought to you by your Lexington, Kentucky area Jimmy Johns.
As the field turns for home in the Met Mile, it's Corinthian and Lawyer Ron head-to-head. Laden Heat down toward the inside third. On the far outside, Political Force is charging hard. Sun King is coming up the inside. Down to the final 16th, it's Corinthian, Lawyer Ron, and Political Force. Corinthian in front, and Corinthian has won it for Jimmy Jerkins. Alan Jerkins finishes second with his Political Force. Lawyer Ron was third. Sun King was fourth. The Met Mile goes in 1:34.3.
Back on the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Pena, Jude Feld, Tom Durkin with the call of the 2007 running of the Met Mile. Corinthian getting the victory that day. As we know, he would go on to a spectacular win in the inaugural Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile at Monmouth later that season. And JT, a perfect segue into the Breeders' Cup Challenge action coming up this afternoon at Belmont Park, with the Met Mile being one win in your in race, and then the Ogden Phipps for the ladies being a win in your in for the distaff. And who better to talk about that than Dora Delgado from the Breeders' Cup, and she's with us once again here on the program. Dora, good to see you again.
Good to see you all. Thanks for having me.
If it's possible on radio, the show just got a hell of a lot better looking.
No, no question. Jeez, after looking at Becker all morning, this is such a treat.
You know, I don't know if that's a compliment or not.
I'm going to take it as such.
You should. You should. It's always great to see you.
Interesting listening to that call. One of the reasons that we made the Met Mile a challenge race was because Corinthian had used it as a stepping stone to the Dirt Mile Championship. So we're hoping from good things from this year's edition as well.
Well, the program kicked off here in the United States anyways last weekend with the Shoemaker Mile at Santa Anita. And then we segue into the two here today. We come back at Churchill next weekend with the Stephen Foster and the Fleur de Lis, which are both winning your in events, and then it really gets rolling from there, Dora.
It does. It does. We have 78 races currently scheduled in the program, with 49 of them here in the U.S. and Canada. We have another 29 internationally, so we are just getting rolling. The same weekend, we also have a one in Brazil for our turf division.
It's a program that really has gotten some serious legs to it, let's put it that way. It's become extremely popular with horsemen and with fans, because they can now latch on to something. They can follow these horses, and they know, okay, if he wins this race or she wins this race, they're on their way to the Breeders' Cup.
That's right. It's a very simple concept, and we know simple always works best. You know, you win and you're in. I mean, you can't get it, you know, any more pared down than that. And it's been a huge factor in how these trainers plan their campaigns. We've had owners tell us a lot that they are something that they plan on from the very beginning when their horses start racing. It's important. Entry fees are one of the huge expenses for owners, and anything we can do to make that easier on these owners is great. Purses need to be big, and benefits need to be great.
What effect does it have on the racetracks when they want a win in your end? Do you have a lot of lobbyists coming to you and say, can't we make this race a win in your end?
We do. If my racing secretaries had their way, we'd have probably a 400 race schedule. You know, everybody wants one, and it's very we have to be sort of picky. Some of our races we choose just based on the fact that they're going to fit into our television schedule. Breeders' Cup has been at the forefront of making sure that racing is on television, on the radio, making sure that we've got exposure. You know, there's a misconception in the world, I'll say, that, you know, people have an idea that television pays us to put our products on, and it's just not the case. We want to put good racing on television, and that means that's an expense to Breeders' Cup, but it's one we're willing to pay to make sure we have the exposure for everyone.
You think about being at the forefront, Dora, and I couldn't agree with that more. You heard the call of the Met Mile from 2007. That was, believe it or not, that day was our first national broadcast, the 07 Belmont Stakes, when Rags to Riches beat Curlin. That led us to the relationship with Breeders' Cup in 07, and we came to Monmouth Park that year. That was our first broadcast of a Breeders' Cup event as we were just getting the network up and rolling. This year at Santa Anita, we'll be broadcasting our 10th consecutive Breeders' Cup here on the network. And you're right, Breeders' Cup was at the forefront of leading that charge, and we can't thank you and everybody at Breeders' Cup enough.
Yep. You know, we've realized as the years have gone by, you know, it's not just enough to put on a fabulous day of racing. We expanded to 2 days, but even that, fans have to be exposed to great racing all year long, and that's not. They can't always make it to the track personally, so being able to tune in on a national channel and see great horses race gives them the incentive to follow those horses throughout the year and then end up at the championships and watch them there.
And you see racetracks now trying to emulate the Breeders' Cup. Like the racing card today has been billed many, many times as a Breeders' Cup type day.
Exactly.
Where all the grade ones are lumped together.
Yeah.
Because the Breeders' Cup's done such a great job of that, and people see how successful the Breeders' Cup is, and they want to emulate that. So that's a feather in your cap as well.
Absolutely. And as a matter of fact, we have, I think, 17 runners in tomorrow's card that ran in the Breeders' Cup Championship. So,
oh, that many.
Yeah.
Wow.
And one returning champion, Stop Charging Maria, who captured our distaff, is running in the Ogden Phipps.
And by the way, you hear Dora saying tomorrow's car, recording this interview with
Sorry.
Dora here. No, it's fine. We're recording this interview with you on a Friday here. So, of course, it is on Saturday afternoon's card. 17 Breeders' Cup runners entered in this program. Just spectacular. You mentioned winning your in, and people say, okay, that's great. We get our entry fee paid. There's more to it than that, though. As this program has evolved, now you're offering travel stipends and all the such. So
that's
talk
right.
about that.
So for the all starters in the Breeders' Cup now get a travel award. If they're shipping in, this year's event is in California on November 4th and 5th at Santa Anita Park. If you're shipping in from a North American location, you're going to get a $10,000 stipend for travel. If you're coming internationally, we're going to give you $40,000. It's just some of those unexpected costs that owners have to bear that a lot of people don't think about, but it's important to them that we help with those arrangements. So that's been a huge success for the Win in Your End program and just the championships in general. But when you win a Win in Your End, not only are your pre-entry and entry fees paid, but you have an automatic selection. And that means sometimes our race is oversubscribed. 14 starters are allowed to go. If we have more than that, we have to use a field selection system. Anybody that wins a challenge, however, bypasses that. They get a free, bypass, go right to the start. They don't have to be selected, so...
No pass and go.
Exactly.
That's great. Well, you know, it's a thing that people really enjoy. They enjoy that fact that they know that they're in and they can plan for that race.
That's right.
And they can adjust their schedule. So it really pays off. If you can win a win and you're in early in the season, it dictates your racing program the rest of the year.
That's true. And you know, sometimes we have multiple champions, so we'll have a horse win maybe two legs out of our seven race classic division. They always ask me if they get to double up on their feet. It's just one. No matter how many you win, you just get one.
Always so. Looking for the edge.
Yeah. So we try to keep it balanced. Every division has at least 2 to 3 races in it. The classic division is fairly large. It's got 7 races. Some of our turf divisions are also fairly big. They have up to 10 to 12 races, and that's because of the overseas competition. We need to make sure we have a few here in the States, and also those internationally.
Visiting with Dora Delgado from Breeders' Cup here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
How is the international winning your ends going? Are we getting more horses as time goes on?
We are. They have started to come. You know, what we have found is it's kind of a, it really depends on where we're running. If we're running it at Keeneland, as we did last year, it is we're getting horses that like a little bit of a softer ground. When we run in California, we get horses that that are preferring some firmer, hard turf. So it's really horses for courses. They're targeting now the international races. We have our senior director of racing, Josh Christian, based in Europe. He'll start this Sunday and be there until right up until pre-entry deadline. So he's very much on the ground out there talking to owners and trainers and getting them to plan out their campaigns. The impediment that we faced early on and when we first got this program started with horses not being nominated has been eliminated. Mostly every European starter is fully nominated. They don't have to pay any exorbitant fees to run, so we've eliminated that challenge. We've added these races where they win free entry fees. We've added the $40,000 shipping allowance, so it could not be more attractive to some of these international trainers. And as a perfect example, I think in 2014 we had three international trainers making their first start actually winning their races. So, I mean, those guys are hooked for life.
Absolutely.
Now.
They're, no
we've
question.
Set that hook, you know, they're coming back. And it's a lot of the younger trainers. They're seeing the opportunities out there. You know, why keep bumping heads against, you know, the people you keep getting beat against in your own country? Go somewhere else and try some new competition.
Only about a minute and a half left here, Dora, before we have to get ready to wrap up this program. But I want to go back to you mentioned Keeneland and running there last year. And I'm going to be the first one to tell you, I had my doubts as to how it was all going to come together, being a smaller venue for a Breeders' Cup. It was flawless. Keeneland, Breeders' Cup, the entire team did an amazing job. Has to give you confidence looking 2 years up the road to a smaller venue like Del Mar in Southern California.
Absolutely. And Del Mar, those folks came to Keeneland, so they saw how it operated. They know the bar's been set very high, and their message to us has consistently been it's going to be even greater in San Diego. They are getting the community support has been awesome so far. They're getting the sports commission there behind it. I think it's going to be one for the ages for sure. You know, looking forward, it's part of our plan to have these events scheduled out 3 years in advance. As you know, we just announced Churchill for 2018. So, you know, knowing where we're going to be gives us a lot of time to plan and make these events even greater.
All right, November 4th and 5th of 2016. That's later this season. You can hear us and you can enjoy the Breeders' Cup at Santa Anita in Arcadia, California. Going to be an amazing time. Can't wait to get out there, but can't wait for the Breeders' Cup Challenge action coming up this afternoon either with the Met Mile and the Ogden Phipps. Dora, keep up the amazing work. Thank you for all your support. Really do appreciate it. And everybody at Breeders' Cup, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, enjoy it. Dora Delgado, like all of our guests who appear on the program, receives a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race. It is the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. It is as classy and alluring as the game itself. You can embrace your passion at EmbraceTheRace.com. Hard to believe we're already talking Breeders' Cup, JT.
Oh, I'm so excited about Breeders' Cup at Del Mar. I can't wait. That's been...
Even more so than Santa Anita, because that's your home track.
I love Santa Anita, but I spend every summer at Del Mar, and I think Breeders' Cup at Del Mar is going to be off the chain. I'm really looking forward to that.
Well, don't forget that 2016 marks the 60-year anniversary of racing at Woodbine Racetrack, at least thoroughbred racing. There will be a couple of win-in-your-ends later this season at Woodbine, but tomorrow you can watch and wager on the Woodbine Oaks. Woodbine will guarantee the early and late pick four pools at $100,000 on Plate Trial and Oaks Day tomorrow. And they will be offering a special 20-cent bet minimum on all Triactor, Superfecta, Pick 3, and Pick 4 pools tomorrow afternoon. But As always, that's not all. You can try your luck with the Thoroughbred Pick 5, now guaranteed at $50,000, Wednesdays, Saturdays, and Sundays starting later today. And, of course, while you're at it, why not give the Jackpot High 5 a go? A huge potential for big pool payouts with the Jackpot High 5. For more information, simply visit WoodbineRacetrack.com. And we will be at Woodbine Sunday, July 3rd, to broadcast the Queen's Plate right here on the network. Only our second international broadcast, and can't wait to get up there. All that coverage presented by our friends at TwinSpires.com.
Yeah, can't wait to get up there for that. It's going to be a lot of fun. The Queen's Plate, such a historic race, and Woodbine, a beautiful racetrack. What a venue. So totally looking forward to 4th of July weekend in Canada.
A couple of minutes left here to wrap up this program on Belmont Day. Jude, let's talk a little bit of Belmont. You didn't actually go through and handicap yet, and we talked about Exaggerator. We talked about some of Todd's horses that he has in here. How'd you see the Belmont this afternoon?
Well, it's a very interesting race. I mean, Exaggerator is going to be the heavy favorite on paper, and deservedly so. He looks very tough to beat in there. And, you know, I mean, he's not a sexy pick. He's going to be 3-5, and but he looks very tough. A horse I'm particularly interested in is Governor Malibu. Christophe Clement has won the Belmont with Tonalist. He knows how to get a horse ready to go a mile and a half. This horse has some tactical speed. I could see him getting a perfect trip, like Joel Rosario as a jockey and in this race. And he's a horse that's 12-1 on the morning line. Might be a little bit of a fuzzy.
Are you turning our back or your back on our old friend Cherry Wine?
Well, no, I think, you know, there's such a huge bunch of closers in here, but Cherry Wine is on his fourth race now in his comeback after being sick, and he just keeps improving. I think he could win. I think there's several horses in here that could win. If Exaggerator gets beat because he's tired or whatever people think, you know, he could get beaten. Cherry Wine is one of the horses that could beat him.
Now we're back 2 o'clock Eastern with all of our undercar coverage taking you all the way through the Belmont Stakes. Our thanks to all of our guests for joining us here this morning. For our producer, Lee Delapina, back in our Lexington studio. For Sean C. Chauncey with us here on site and with our social media. And, of course, for Jude Feld, I'm Mike Penna. We're back later. And, of course, go Steelers.
Good night, Barbados.